And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, along with co-host Bonnie Berman. How are you today, Bonnie?
I'm good. Are you better today?
Yes, I'm better today, I'm glad to say.
I'm glad too.
Feeling pretty chipper today, considering, and we have such nice weather. Well, we begin the hour with a visit from the president and CEO of Broward-based Kids in Distress. He's Mark Doege. We'll discuss the efforts of Kids in Distress and the important service of foster care in the South Florida area. Welcome to you, Mark Doege.
Thanks for having us, Joe, and thank you, Bonnie.
Very good to have you. Also with us is Diana Lake. She's the Regional Director of Foster Care for Kids in Distress. That program is the main but not the only topic for discussion. Welcome to you, Diana.
Thank you so much.
Mark, let's begin with you, just with a little history of Kids in Distress, the mission and the scope.
Absolutely. Kids in Distress is a nonprofit agency in Broward County, offering services in both Broward and Palm Beach. It's been around for 35 years, and our goal is to prevent child abuse, preserve the family, and provide treatment to children affected by abuse and neglect. Like I said, we've been in the community for 35 years. We're one of the largest child and family agencies, and we have a continuum of services that provide services to children both on our campus in Wilton Manors and throughout the Broward County community. We have a very large foster care program with over 250 foster homes. It's probably one of the highlights of our agency. But on campus, we also have a very large community-based program, really an army of social workers, therapists, family support workers who reach out to families who are in need in the community to preserve families, to be sure that we're strengthening them, providing parent support, and keeping children out of foster care.
What are some of the funding sources?
Our primary funding sources are from the Department of Children and Families through the community-based care provider ChildNet, the Children's Services Council of Broward County Children's Services, you know, through county funding, Medicaid, and then we actually raise $2 million of our $11 million budget from private sources, special events, major donors, foundations.
So it's always a scramble.
It really is. It really is.
And we'll talk about a couple of the events. I don't know if I should be asking you this, Mark, or you, Diana. Just tell us about the process whereby a child arrives at your door. How do they get there?
Typically, children arrive in foster care because a call is made to the Florida Abuse Hotline with an allegation of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. Once that call is screened, the local investigators for the area will be notified, and they will go out to the home where the child lives and assess whether, in fact, there is a concern for the child's safety and well-being. If it is determined that the child needs to be removed, the local community-based care provider, the child will be taken there, and foster provider care providers such as Kids in Distress will be called and be asked to place the child in one of the foster homes that we have available.
What is that Florida Abuse Hotline number? Do you happen to know it? No. Okay. Well, I'll look it up during the program so we can give that out. So how is Kids in Distress different from other agencies?
We pride ourselves on the level of support that we offer to our families. We offer 24-hour a day, 7-day a week support to all of our foster parents. And that support can range from just general parenting advice and guidance to actual support regarding the case in a dependency court system. So my team is available, as well as myself and Mark, to answer any questions that come up. And through that support, we're able to best meet the needs of both the families and the children that they're serving within their homes.
Does the guardian ad litem have anything to do with these kids?
Or? Absolutely. It is really best practice that all children, I feel, that are in foster care are assigned a guardian ad litem. Unfortunately, due to restrictions on volunteers, in other words, there aren't enough volunteers to meet the need. Many of our children do have guardians ad litem that are assigned, and it is most desirable if those guardians take an active interest in the foster children, and they are required to go out at least once a month and spend time with the children and see what is in the child's best interest. They then take that knowledge to court and present to the court a report as to how the child is doing and if any changes are needed.
In fact, next Thursday we're having a program with Guardian Ad Litem.
It's an excellent organization.
If you'd like to join in with Mark Doege and Kids in Distress and also Diana Lake, you're certainly welcome. The number 1-800-743 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, or Bonnie will take your email. It's radio@WLRN.org.
If you're a parent, a foster parent with kids in distress, we'd love to hear from you. If you're interested, they're in need of foster parents. We're also interested in hearing from you if you are interested in becoming a foster parent. To what do you attribute this 50% increase in the number of children needing foster care over the last year? Diana or Mark?
I believe there's several reasons. You know, there's been a significant increase in the amount of domestic violence, you know, and I don't know if it's the amount of domestic violence or the amount of reports, you know, because domestic violence through, you know, both professional sports, through the media, you know, there's a highlight. There is a lot of cases that come in now to the Florida Abuse Hotline where domestic violence is a precursor of that report. And any child that is exposed to domestic violence, you know, is a valid report. And if that violence is occurring in the home, you know, oftentimes those children will exhibit violent behavior themselves, and that exposure will cause them to exhibit behaviors that, that come out in school and other social settings.
And Diana, did you want to add something? Any other factors do you think are contributing to this? I mean, 50% rise is a huge
amount. And I think as the economic troubles occur, that obviously is also increasing the number of domestic violence incidents that are happening, as well as additional stress being put on these families. Most of our children are coming in due to mental health and substance abuse issues in Broward County. So there's a huge problem with both of those.
I do want to give that a Florida Abuse Hotline number out. It's 1-800-96-ABUSE. That's 1-800-96-ABUSE, and we'll have a link to that on our website.
What are the qualifications to be a foster parent? And I'm sure they go through a very tight screening process. Can you describe that?
They do. In Broward, Palm Beach, and Dade County, the actual curriculum to become a foster parent is 21 hours of training. In addition to the 21 hours of training, there are federal, state, and local background clearances that are done on each individual. Two interviews are done to the foster parent or prospective foster parent's residence. And there is a very, very time-consuming interview that we try to put the family through to make sure that this is a good fit, because it's our goal to get a loving, nurturing home for these children. And lastly, they have to be financially stable. They have to be able to have enough income to support their monthly expenses.
Can anyone qualify to become a foster parent? And by that, I mean single, married, already with children, or those from the LGBT community?
Yes, excellent question. Yes, we welcome, and actually the community of fostering agencies as a whole typically welcome single people, married people, same-sex couples, anybody that's capable of providing a loving and nurturing home to children.
And what kind of, what if a parent really wants to and is very qualified to be a foster parent but can't afford it?
Unfortunately, with the code requirements, they have to be financially stable. So they have to be able on paper to document that they have enough income coming into the home to support their monthly expenses.
And by the way, that now Kathleen wrote in too, the number is 1-800-96-ABUSE or 1-800-962-2873. 1-800-962-2873.
What's the average age of the kids that go into foster care?
For our agency, we serve typically a lot of younger children under the age of 5. But in foster care in general, it ranges from birth all the way up to 17 years of age. I mean, there really is a consistent need for parents to parent that entire age range.
Then my question just went out of my head. Does the foster parent sometimes pick the child they want, or do you pick?
Assign.
It's a good question. It's actually a kind of a joint effort.
Okay.
When we license foster parents during the 7-week curriculum, we're interacting with them, and they actually will tell us what their profile of the child or children they'd like to serve. Typically, that'll be an age range of a child or a sibling group that they want to help. And then once those children become available, we'll then call the foster parent and see if they're willing to accept. Lately, there's been such a need. We do call people outside of their preferred profile, though, because we do want to get a loving home for all the children that are coming.
Can foster parents also have an option to adopt? Mm. Is that considered?
Well, fostering is we train foster parents that the goal of foster care is reunification. With that being said, there are times, unfortunately, where birth parents cannot meet the needs of their case plan, and these children do become available for adoption, and foster parents are given first right to adopt. But we actually do not license foster parents solely for the goal of adoption. It's for the need of fostering.
Again, our number, if you're a foster parent with kids in distress or if you're interested in becoming one, our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. We're speaking with Mark Doege. He's the president and CEO of Kids in Distress, or KID, and Diana Lake is the regional director of foster care. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're visiting with Kids in Distress. Their president and CEO is Mark Doege, and Diana Lake is their regional director of foster care. We have an emailer, which is a great email, because I asked it the other way around. Andrew wants to know if there's a need for foster homes for lesbian, gay, and transgender youth.
There's a huge need, and I can speak only of Broward County, but there is a huge need in Broward County for homes that can accommodate that group. And we actually do recruit, we try actively to recruit for families that are willing to welcome those children into the homes.
And Mark, you were saying during the break that any given day there are 20 children waiting for a foster home in Broward County?
I would say that is probably the average. You know, there are times when we've been advised that there's been over 30 or, you know, 35 children, and at times just a few less than 20. But on any given day, there is a tremendous need for foster care parents in general. You know, children waiting for a placement, whether those kids are under the age of 5 or they're, you know, special needs children, or whether they're teenagers. You know, there are all types of families that are needed to take children.
And while they're waiting, where are they?
They might be in transitional homes. They might be in, you know, oftentimes what will happen is kids will go to ChildNet and they will be assessed. ChildNet has an assessment placement there that, you know, that the kids go to, where they look at what the needs are going to be from a physical, a psychological, and a health, a health way. And then they reach out to all the foster care agencies. And then what we do is try to identify a family that we could match them to. But at any given time, you know, usually it's in at times what will happen is those kids may spend an evening with a foster parent. But what we want to do is provide them with a stable placement that they can reside until such time that either reunification takes place or permanency with a kinship family, a relative caregiver, or termination of parental rights.
Okay. There was an article a few weeks ago in The New Yorker about foster parenting. It was by a woman, and she really says it was a very difficult job, and people really have to think about it, getting into it, because a lot of these kids have a lot of baggage, and they've been rejected so many times, and it's it can be very trying for a foster parent.
It's not an easy job. You know, the most important thing is to equip those parents with the skills necessary through initial training, and probably most importantly, provide them with support, you know, through the ongoing process of fostering. At our agency, at Kids in Distress, we offer 24/7 support on an ongoing basis, you know, where we have somebody on call at all times to offer any questions that they may have.
Such as the child has reacted this way, what do I do?
That there's somebody to reach out to and to ask that question, as well as we have forums that are designed for foster parents to be able to reach out to other foster parents, whether that's on social media, whether that is a telephone tree or a telephone list of folks who have fostered for a long period of time that they can reach out to for either questions or clarifications on issues that may arise.
We also talked before we actually started the program on these maternal, and I was also thinking probably paternal, care programs about co-sleeping and all that. Tell us about those programs that you have.
Well, there's been a lot of attention in recent months to the number of child deaths. And so in Broward County, through some significant efforts by the Children's Services Council of Broward County, they staff those cases. And what has really been identified is that both drowning and then unsafe sleeping are two of the major causes of death to children that are in any homes. And so there's significant efforts within the maternal health community through the Healthy Families Initiative, the Healthy Start Initiative, through the school district. district to really provide and equip parents with education as to what is safe sleeping. You know, it means not sleeping, not bringing your baby into your own bed. It means that the baby is in a crib without stuffed animals, without blankets, without bumpers. And what we're doing as an agency is reaching out to every family that we touch. We work with approximately 800 families at any given time and providing that information on an ongoing, consistent basis to keep those children safe.
Let's take a caller. We've got Gloria in Fort Lauderdale. Hey there.
Hi, it's Glory.
Oh, hi, Glory.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a Kids in Distress foster parent for 4 years, and I just want to hit on the fact that they talk about the support that we get. We get excellent support 24/7. We can call them any kind of question, any problem, or just someone to say, it's going to be okay, you can make it.
Huh. So sometimes you have some rather stressful moments, I suppose, and in a quandary of just of what to do.
That's correct. Mm. I have kids ages, I have 3 2-year-olds.
Oh, my.
And 1 20-month-old.
What do you do with your spare time?
They provide daycare for our kids. Through Family Central, and during the day, I normally doctor's appointments, errands, court, those kind of things. That's my spare time. In the evenings, I have my kids.
Do the foster kids continue to see their estranged parents?
Yes, I'm one of the parents that believes in co-parenting, where I make a conscious effort to keep the kids in touch with their biological families, mm-hmm. because we were taught that reunification is the main goal for foster care. So I encourage the parents to stay in contact. ChildNet provides visitation, and as a foster parent, I usually have the option of supervising visits with the kids and their parents.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Those are supervised visits?
Sometimes they're supervised. Sometimes they're not supervised.
Uh-huh.
Where we take the children to a public place and they meet their parents. If it is a supervised visit, it's at ChildNet. If they allow me to supervise the parents, then I work out the arrangement.
I see. Actually, we have an emailer, Emilio, who says, thank you for spotlighting the issues relating to foster care. As Mark and Diana have indicated, the need for foster parents is great. KID is one of the premier agencies here in Broward and Palm Beach counties addressing those needs. ChildNet, as the community-based agency managing the foster care and adoption system in Broward and Palm Beach counties, is very proud of the partnership with Kids in Distress and Mark and Diana in particular. And Emilio is the president, Benitez, and CEO of ChildNet.
Anything else to add, Glory?
No.
Okay.
I, too, applaud you guys for spotlighting kids in distress and also the need for foster parents. We're desperate. We need them.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, and good luck, and we wish you well.
Thank you.
So let's give out some contact information. Vivian writes in, are same-sex couples eligible for foster children, which we already said yes to, and that's a big yes. Yes. So... I wanted to just repeat that. So your contact information for parents interested, what is that?
954-390-7654 and extension 1247.
Do you need volunteers for those who don't want to be parents but just want to help out?
We do have a volunteer program at Kids in Distress as well as a mentoring program. So you can also call that number if you're interested, and we will route you to the correct party to go through the steps to become either a volunteer or a mentor with our agency.
Sometimes phone numbers are a little, we'll have that on the website, but if they go to kidinc.org or kidsindistress.org, can they also find out about, you know, perhaps becoming a foster parent?
Absolutely. All of our contact information is on there, and then oftentimes our schedules for our orientations for foster care parents, as well as our upcoming parenting classes and PIP curriculums are on there.
PIP.
Partnership and parenting.
So you might have some young parents who have no other kids, and they just want to learn to be good parents, and you can train them.
Those folks could, if they have questions about parents, they can certainly reach out to our agency, and we would hook them up with one of our programs, one of our family strengthening programs, to assist them.
And tell us about this Thanksgiving business, the fundraiser.
Well, we have a direct mail campaign that is out currently that provides actually support for the food that we give out at Thanksgiving. And, you know, certainly we look for funds all the time to be able to support the families in need within our community. And so any donation would help. We're actually asking the community, to, you know, if they can reach out and, you know, provide us with $40, we'd be able to support a family of five, you know, within the community with a Thanksgiving meal. That's one of the drives that we're doing. Or drop off food to our agency, you know, to be able to provide that to families.
And before we take the caller, just one other thing is just very briefly, because we want to get to the caller, the 11th annual Kids in Distress Inlet Challenge Bicycle Ride.
We're real excited about our ride that occurs on December 7th, 2014. And, you know, with this radio show, we're actually giving a discount. If you use the code RADIO14 on our website, again, RADIO14, you'll get a 25% off of that initial registration, which is really only $40 as it is. But it's a real exciting event where we'll have over 500 riders in one of our premier events riding down A1A, either a 30-mile, a 30-mile, a 50-mile, or a 65-mile route.
Well, I'll do the 65.
There you go, Joe.
After the back surgery, you know.
Okay.
Let's take, we're short on time. This is Carmine, Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I love your show, number one, but number two, I'm so glad that you're highlighting foster parenting. I was a product of being a foster child. I'm 35 years old now. I have two children, and I look forward to becoming a foster parent as soon as my finances become a little bit better. But not all kids, people need to understand kids didn't put themselves in this situation. Their situation called for them to become foster kids, and not all kids have issues. Some of them do, but the bottom line is they just want love and a secure place to stay until, you know, they reunite with their family.
That's really very beautiful. Carmine, did you want to say anything to Carmine?
Well, I, you know, as a leader in the community, I would just like to congratulate Carmine on being a parent herself. You know, because certainly, you know, to overcome any of the obstacles she has and to be a positive parent and to say such positive things is a real testament to how far she has come. And congratulations, Carmine. You know, if she ever needs any assistance or would like to reach out, you know, we're there for her. And, you know, she can give us a call at KID and at any time.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much
Bye-bye.
For calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, we just want to give out some contact information. Again, it's kidinc.org. or kidsindistress.org, and they do have this Kid Inlet Challenge bicycle ride on December 7th, and with the code RADIO14, they get a discount, and then you have your annual Thanksgiving appeal coming up.
Yes.
So Mark Doggie is the president and CEO of Kids in Distress. We thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And Diana Lake is the regional director of foster care at Kids in Distress. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
Food and Dining up next. We return 34 minutes past 1 o'clock. Thursday edition, Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Well, yes, Thursday has arrived. Take it easy over there, Linda.
I've got food here. I've got a lot
She's
of love in the studio.
Rattling around over there. Well, Linda is here with us. Today we'll speak with a figure from an iconic Miami Beach food and restaurant operation. I remember going there when I first moved here in 1974. Just hearing the name of that iconic market and restaurant makes me think of the magnificent sliced brisket with the au jus. Linda Gourmet Groceries, great food, catering. It's the works, right?
Yes. So what's the name of the market?
Well, I'm leaving that for you.
All right. Okay. Well, first I'm going to ask you, have you ever thrown away food?
Yes.
Well, we all do.
And not spoiled food.
In fact, no, fresh food. In fact, 33 million tons of food were thrown away last year. We probably throw away about one third of what we bring home. So our guest today has some tips on how we can save food and create great dishes. Now here it comes, the name. Well, first of all, he's Michael Love, and he's the specialty chef at Epicure Market, is what talking about. And his book is The Salvage Chef Cookbook.
I had trouble saying it on the billboard.
Right. Welcome, Michael Love.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to talk to people about how they can not only save money, but not throw away so much food.
Well, we want to hear all about it because it's really important. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions or maybe some comments about food waste? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And we do have email.
Oh, good.
radio@WLRN.org.
All right. And of course, our favorite wine guy is with us, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. And you can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column, but you can also read his wine column that's now in the Saturday food section of the Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I think I'll talk about salvaging leftover wine.
Oh. Do you ever have any?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
That's exactly my point of view, but Linda has patiently explained to me that some people have it.
I see.
I mean, who knew?
Okay, well, let's go to Michael Love. Michael, we throw away a lot of food. What changes can we make in our kitchens to handle excess food?
Well, really, the first thing, it starts with rethinking food. You know, in other countries where they don't have as much of it, it's kind of sacred. Here, we take a bite, we throw it away. So you have to first start rethinking food and not just throwing it away.
So what do you mean by rethinking it?
Well, if you have two tomatoes, for instance, sitting on the counter, and they've sat there maybe a little bit longer than you would have liked, just because they've gotten a little softer and not prime time for your salad doesn't mean that they can't be used in some dish.
Such as
you could roast them very simply in the oven and make a salad dressing. You can roast them and make them into a sauce. You can turn it into a soup. My book has probably 15 or 20 different recipes using just those tomatoes that are sitting on your counter. Mm. So rethinking in terms of not immediately throwing it away because it's not perfect. It may not be perfect to eat raw, but it's still destined for greatness, as I like to say, if you repurpose it, you know, in an interesting way.
Well, the other thing is, I don't know how many bottles in my refrigerator that are half full. You know, you had a recipe, you had a condiment and you used it, or what are some suggestions here?
Like jars that are sitting on the refrigerator door.
You and I were talking about previously, you know, you use those roasted red peppers in a jar.
Yeah.
And there's always one left in the bottom, and I save it until the white mold comes.
Right. So one of the things you can do with those items that are already opened, such as roasted red peppers, olives, capers, you can just fill the jar to the top with extra virgin olive oil and seal it. And that gives you another 2 or 3 weeks beyond what you would normally have if you just let it sit in the vinegar or the water that it's in.
You mean?
You know, that brings up a question. I understand that extra virgin olive oil is best in its first year of life. Is there anything you can do with it if it gets past that?
You really can't. One of the things that you can do with oil is just infuse it. And that does give it a little bit longer life because you can seal that. So you can infuse it with roasted garlic, with herbs, fill it all the way to the top of a sealable jar, and then seal it and keep it in your cabinet.
When you say seal it, are you talking about just closing it tight?
Like a mason jar that has some airtight.
Okay, so it has
seal.
To be in that kind of thing.
Airtight. That'll really extend it.
I like to use alfalfa sprouts in salads and sandwiches. Boy, they really go quickly. Is there a way I can make them last longer?
One of the things you can do with alfalfa sprouts is mix it with another vegetable like a cabbage and then blitz it in the, you know, in a food processor. And you can add a little bit of olive oil and it forms kind of like a alfalfa paste, which you can spread on bread. It's super healthy.
Hmm. Wow. Well, there's an idea. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a caller here, Michael in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Michael.
You're
on the air. Hi, you're on the air, Michael.
well, food, my number one favorite subject, as I'm sure many people are. I'm vegan, so eating can be a little bit of a challenge, especially when eating out. But one of the things that we have done at our home to save food is all of the vegetables that we use, the nubs, the end of the onion with the root on it, or the end of the celery, or the bok choy, or anything that just not going to go in the salad that doesn't look pretty or may be a little bit woody or stalky, we throw into a great big Tupperware and we cook it up and make vegetable stock out of it.
Well, that's a good idea.
Great idea.
Thank you, Michael. And I remember, Michael, love that when I was at the Cordon Bleu School, there was always a stock pot on the, so you had trimmings from mushrooms, you had trimmings from any of the vegetables, all of it always went into the stock pot. But we don't do that today. Yeah. We don't have that. So when we have bits and pieces of vegetables and things like that, what's a quick and easy soup to make?
Well, the best thing you can do to stretch it out, because if you don't use that the next day or two, you're not going to want to use it. So you put it in a Ziploc bag and then put it in the freezer. And now you've got 3 to 6 months before you can use it again to make a stock. But a stock or a simple soup is great. You just, you know, either chicken stock or water, and simmer those little ends and bits of vegetables down for about an hour or two, and it makes a great base for anything you want to do, whether it's a sauce or another soup.
Great. And I always find that at the end of the week, I take all my vegetables and throw in some onions. I saute them all, put some bought stock into the broth, into that, and 20 minutes later, I've got soup.
Yeah, you got a great stock that you can then add chicken to or add another ingredient to take it even to another step. Mm-hmm.
Right, and you can freeze it and
stock
have that.
Stock can always be frozen. Good right. 6 months.
Okay, so we've got food here. And I'm,
yes,
not, I'm going to get to my favorite one in a minute, but we've tell
hands
me what I...
Hands off the cookie, Linda. Hands off the cookie.
You told people. This cookie is
this
bigger
is quite
than
a
our
cookie,
heads.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You have leftover cookies?
Not in my house. All right. Let's go to the other food we have first. Go
great.
Ahead.
So one great item that you can make, especially with those vegetables that we were talking about, is chili. So I brought two different types of chili. One's a vegetarian chili, using a lot of those vegetables that just aren't prime time vegetables anymore. You can use fresh vegetables, but if you have those that have been wilted just slightly, they're not as in perfect condition as they were, they can be chopped up, sauteed, and made into an incredible chili. So I have a vegetarian chili.
Mm, that's good.
But now, let me ask you, because mm-hmm. it's really good. And Joe, you thought it was really good.
Yes, I did.
Yes,
It doesn't have any meat in it, Joe.
Right.
What have you put in there to give us this extra flavor?
Yeah, I kind
of
tricked you.
That's the boost
right.
of it.
So one of the things that I do is I take mushrooms and I chop them up in the food processor and then roast them in the oven. And it ends up looking like ground beef. So you get the roasted flavor, but you have the texture of beef, but it's really not. They're ground up mushrooms that have been roasted in the oven.
And roasting the vegetables gives them an intense flavor, a more intense flavor.
Yeah. Anytime you can take a vegetable and cook it longer, for a longer period of time, you uh-huh. coax more and more flavor out of it.
So to make this, is it with fresh tomatoes?
Yeah, there were fresh tomatoes and canned tomatoes, a combination of the mm-hmm. two, because we had a can of tomatoes that everyone has sitting in their pantry, so we used that. We had some fresh tomatoes on the counter that were not looking so great, so we cut out the core and chopped those up. We had some peppers, onions, garlic, and sauteed them down, added a little bit of stock, vegetable stock, like we were just talking,
right.
cooked it down, and then we add a spice blend that has
some
chili in it.
I knew there was something.
There we go.
What is the spice blend?
All right, so great question. Everybody has at least 12 to 20 spices in their home, of which they probably haven't used most of them in 2 years.
Right.
So one of the ways that
they're looking
you can,
gray and tired and horrible.
And they cake up and they get hard and you don't yeah. really use them. The best way to use them and not have to spend more money buying more is make spice blends out of them. And so my book has a whole chapter on rubs and blends where you take the cumin and the oregano and the thyme with some kosher salt, blend it together in a food processor, and then you jar it like a sealed container. And you've got incredible blends using the ingredients or using the spices that you like.
You could have those on the table, I guess.
You could have them on the table to put on a salad. You can put it on a sandwich. You can mix it with some yogurt and make a delicious dipping sauce.
That's a great idea because all of us have so many. You have to buy that big bottle where it's relatively big and you only use a teaspoon or something and it's still there. And so now what's in the beef one?
So the beef one is a similar flavor profile. It has chili powder. It has the same kind of spice blends from my cabinet. It has the tomatoes and the vegetables, but this has some beef that I bought. I bought some short ribs. We didn't use mm-hmm. them all. I took them off the bone. I cut it up so we have some sauteed, seared Kind of brisket meat is in there.
Leftover. I mean, if you're making a roast and you have some leftover, mm-hmm. that's a great way to use it.
You can use either raw meat that you sear and cook for a long period of time, or if you're in a hurry, you can take leftover meat that's already been cooked, and then it's made in such a shorter period of time because you don't have to wait for the meat to cook. It's already cooked. You're just warming it through with those flavors.
But short ribs and chili is a really good idea.
Yeah.
Now, big smile on Joe Cooper's face. Big smile. Okay, now I've got this cookie here. How many inches in diameter is this, 10?
I would say that's between 8 and 10.
8 and 10, yeah. Okay, I've got a double dark chocolate chunk cookie with chocolate espresso bits.
And I've
My
got a white
God.
And dark chocolate.
And I have an oatmeal raisin chunk cookie with toasted walnuts.
And okay. I have empty hands.
We have to take a break here, but just quickly, you told me that what a great thing to do is you have leftover pies or anything like that, you mix it into cookie dough.
Yeah, especially in the holidays when you have that one little slice of pecan pie. You can throw it in the food processor, throw it in with some cookie dough, and you have pecan pie cookies.
Oh, wow.
And that's in the book, too. We have a whole section on
Well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Michael Love about salvaging food waste. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Chef Michael Love. He's the specialty chef at Epicure Market, and he's been helping us rethink the way we look at food with tips on how to store food and how to use it. Whatever's left. And his book is The Salvage Chef Cookbook. And he's going to be talking about his book at the Miami Book Fair International. He'll be there Saturday, November 22nd. If you go and see him cook, first of all, he's adorable, so you'll like to go and see him cook. And second of all,
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, nobody asked you.
Oh, Joe.
He'll be at the Miami Culinary Institute. And then on Sunday, the 23rd, at noon, he's going to be at Building 8. And then you have some cookbook signings at Epicure?
Next week, next Tuesday at South Beach Epicure from mm-hmm. 5 to 7, and then the Sunny Isles Beach Store on Wednesday from 5 to 7. You can RSVP at events@epicuremarket.com.
Okay, and I'm sure there'll be some food there.
There will be food and drink.
Oh, well, all right. And by the way, I'm also going to be at the book fair. I'm going to be talking about how to manage diabetes with diet and exercise. My latest books are Simply Smoothies and No Fuss Diabetes Desserts. Come and see me on Sunday, November 23rd at 3 p.m. so you can see both of us there.
So I'll we can there. Watch you exercise?
Right. Uh-huh. Okay, let's go to dinner in minutes. Go back to your chili.
I want to see that.
Dinner in minutes. It's a curried chicken pot pie, and I picked this because it's a good way to use leftovers. I have some curry powder. I saute it in oil with some onions, green bell pepper, and sliced mushrooms. Then I add a little flour to the skillet, a little chicken broth, and you just cook that until the sauce gets thick. And then if you have some leftover chicken or turkey or whatever leftover meat, I suppose, you put it in an oven-proof casserole dish. Put the sauce and vegetables over it, and then you can cover it with a refrigerated pie crust, and it'll bake about 20 minutes at 350 degrees. Now, if you want a quicker version of this, just put some breadcrumbs on top of it and warm it through. You don't have to wait for the pie crust to cook through. Now, that recipe and a photo, it's on my very new website, just went up this week.
Oh,
I'll have to visit that.
You have to visit it. It's dinnerinminutes.com. Come and have a look. Let me know what you think about it. Of course, only if you like it, let me know, please.
And no criticisms. No,
I would love criticism, but nice ones.
Okay.
Okay. Please follow me on Twitter. That's @LGassenheimer. And Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, after you persuaded me that there really is such a thing as leftover wine, I started looking into how to keep it.
Okay.
And I think the best advice is just to put a cork in it and put it in the fridge for 2 or 3 days. It'll be fine. Even after that, it won't be spoiled, and it won't turn to vinegar for many, many weeks. At worst, it might lose some of its fruity flavor and complexity, but even then, you can still use it for cooking. Still, I suppose it's better for the wine if you can keep it from contact with the air. And some wine fans, the very simplest thing, some wine fans simply drop enough marbles into the bottle to bring up the wine up to the cork.
What do you do with the marbles when you're trying to drink it?
Well,
it just pours around it?
you just try not to swallow any. Yeah, pour out, put your thumb over the bottle or something.
Marvelous. Well, that would be a good idea. Go ahead.
Pour it through a strainer. There are 100 things you can do.
Okay.
Other fans, this is kind of clever. Other fans just buy a half bottle of some wine and drink it, and then use it over time to pour other leftover wines in it, into the smaller bottle, so it comes closer to the top.
Oh.
But, of course, a lot of people are gadget freaks, and you can buy little pumps that suck the air out of the top of the bottle. There's one online called VacuVan. It's only $7 or $8. And other fans buy aerosol cans of inert gas, argon or that sort of thing, to pump into the top of the bottle. There's one of these called Private Reserve that's available online for about $15. But here's the really cool solution. There's a gadget called a Coravan, C-O-R-A-V-I-N, wine access system. This is very clever. It was invented by a medical device entrepreneur. With a Coravan, a long, thin, hollow needle is inserted through the foil and cork and into the bottle. And then argon gas is pumped in through the needle, forcing wine back out through the needle. So you can keep the wine for months without ever removing the cork.
Would you say that again?
I've seen this work. The reason you want the wine to come out is?
So you can drink it.
Oh, so you never have to open up the bottle of wine.
Yeah, you can, theoretically, you could keep a bottle of wine for years. I don't think anybody's tried that yet, but tasters have done this for over several months and then compared it to a fresh bottle, and they say they can't tell the difference. So I haven't done it myself. And of course, it's only $299.95, so you got to be kind of a serious wine person. But if you have a high-end wine that you have some left over, a $100 bottle of wine or something, you don't want to just force yourself to drink it or let it get stale, so it might be
You wouldn't
worth
have
it.
To force me.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, in the end, which method you use may depend on your philosophy. They say that some people look at a glass of wine and say it's half full, and others say it's half empty.
I just say delicious.
My philosophy is either way, I need more wine in that glass.
Okay, and you had a question, I think, for Michael Love.
Oh, yeah, I understand there's a section of your book that talks about salvaging a cocktail. How do you do that?
Well, you know, just about the wine for a moment, another way to salvage wine or have leftover wine is to make it into sangria. So you can take either a red sangria or a white sangria. Once you introduce fruit and some other ingredients, depending on what your recipe is, that can last in the refrigerator for 2, 3, 4 days, and it won't go bad. So sangria is a
good idea.
Great
good
salvage.
Idea.
But for cocktails, what I discovered that whenever I buy a basil plant, I have basil left over. Or if I buy some thyme or other fresh herbs, there's always herbs left over. So you can take those herbs and make a simple syrup out of them, sugar and water, equal parts. And when you make a basil simple syrup, it makes an incredible cocktail, whether it's gin or vodka. So most of the cocktails in the book are using some salvage item that we were able to repurpose.
So in the simple syrup, it'll keep for a while?
Keep a long time. You can freeze the simple syrup and it'll last in the refrigerator for up to 3 months.
Oh, wow.
You could maybe, I think Fred talked about this once, excuse me, but can't you freeze it in like ice cube trays?
You can.
And
then
get
really creative.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that and freeze it in ice cube trays in oil, and then you can use it in a salad or some other recipe.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because you always have leftover.
Right.
I do find, though, that like with parsley, I'll wash it dry, spin it dry, and then I'll wrap a damp paper towel around the end and put it in a plastic bag. It'll last for weeks.
You know, I tried that after you suggested it, and it worked brilliantly. It's really a nice idea.
Oh, great.
And can't you freeze herbs, too, Michael?
You can, but like you know, like Fred said, you know, oil. Put it with oil.
Oil.
And that would be the best way. Okay. It's really been interesting and very tasty week, Michael Love. Thank you so much for joining us and for the very delicious food.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
He's very inventive.
His book is The Salvage Chef Cookbook. It's a fascinating read. And make a nice hostess gift during the holiday season. The hostess might have some leftover food hanging around. And he's going to be at the Miami Book Fair International November 22nd and 23rd. Look it up and see when he's going to be there. Fred Tasker, great advice, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joe Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We ate well today,
yes,
huh?
We did.
We did.
And I even let you have some cookie.
That was so generous of you, Linda. I mean,
I thought so. There's enough cookies here for the army.
I can't believe that you actually parted with them.
Well, I'm nice to you. Okay. Well, next week, we'll be talking with Chef Fabio Vaviani about his new restaurant on South Beach. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in this hour. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we'll return with a program which examines whether the internet has fulfilled its early hopes for more democracy, real communications, and equality. Social critic Astra Taylor joins us. And you. And Bonnie will have a calendar today.
Oh, good.
On this day in 1850, 164 years ago, the birth of Robert Louis Stevenson in Edinburgh, Scotland. Kidnapped, Treasure Island, and The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And on this day in 1975, 39 years ago, the death of Union activist Karen Silkwood under suspicious circumstances outside Crescent, Oklahoma. She was a chemical technician at Kerr McGee and most likely died from plutonium contamination. And one more while we muse on cute hippopotamus ballerinas. On this day in 1940, 74 years ago, Walt Disney's Fantasia is released in New York. It's a cartoon version of Goethe's The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Check out the Topical Currents Facebook page. Audio archives of this and other programs at WLRN.org.
I just wanted to add that Ed Bell is having another live performance tomorrow.
Alan Harris. So we leave with a thought from Robert Louis Stevenson, who will not be able to check out Linda's new website. Stevenson died in the Samoan Islands, aged 44. Quote, "He who knoweth the precepts by heart, but faileth to practice them, is like unto one who lighteth a lamp, and then shutteth his eyes." Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker. Thanks for making public radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.